Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by East Coast Ed Carbajal. Ed, how's it going, brother?
Well, you know, same old, same old.
Yeah. It was kind of getting back to normal for me, at least getting out to fight week last week for the quote-unquote International Fight Week.
Yeah, quote unquote, from what you told me, that's for sure. I mean, at least you didn't mush the fights, but everything you sent me as far as our communications and what it looked like.
I think you kind of replied best when I mentioned the lines and stuff. You said standing in line for an autograph isn't an expo. And yeah, I mean, I was misspeaking calling it an expo. They call it a fan experience now, but let's just put it this way. I'm glad I came up in this sport and was around this sport when I was, because I was able to experience stuff that newer fans will never get the opportunity to, barring some kind
They'll think you're making it up.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
If I told somebody that, like, I got to meet George St. Pierre and and then 3 minutes later, Mark Coleman, Don Fry, and Hoist Gracie, and then walked over to Stipe Miocic and, you know, and a group of nine other dudes standing with him, Alan Belcher and Luke Rockhold. And, you know, it's just crazy.
I'm so glad I made it to the last, well, I'll say one and a half. Last two, because I say a half because 2016 is when the sale happened and all this weird, like, factory style of treating fans and fighters, you know, started coming into play. I mean, it's crazy because newer fans, like you said, really don't know. They literally are they think this is how the big, you know, events are done. And then, you know, we have all our stories from the 2015 Fan Expo. I mean, that's probably the best week of my life.
I mean, yeah, like, no, just... I mean, and I don't even know if that was the best expo, to be honest. I could go back a couple of years to the, 12, 13, 14 expos and maybe even argue that those were better than 15, but 15 was still them doing the same kind of things that they were doing. The only difference would be maybe fighters like Anderson Silva and stuff was at some of those earlier ones, yeah. John Jones, before they kind of became this global, you know, stars that they became. But I guess I should just start down the line of how the whole week went, because not everything was a negative. There was definitely some positives and stuff. So ended up there Thursday.
You were at the Hall of Fame thing.
Wasn't sure about the Hall of Fame. Mentioned that last week that I was kind of up in the air. Last minute, some more tickets popped up, so the better seats became available, some aisle seats, down in the lower section. So snag those. Ended up heading out there. That turned out to be fun. Mark Ratner, I have no interest in. In fact, I probably have more negative to say, you know, from what I've heard and the perception that he's given off from my perspective as a fan with some of the shady businesses, and how it worked out where his best friends ended up buying the UFC and he finally decided to vote to legalize it, that kind of thing. But he got in. Again, the fight didn't really interest. It was Jones and Gustafson fight. Great fight. I'm not a big John Jones fan. He proved again more that following morning why I he's not my cup of tea when it comes to this.
Yeah.
McGregor era of just it's more the Jones era. Jones is the original. Jones is the guy who was going out there and getting DUIs, and I'm not going to judge a guy for one mistake or two mistakes, but it's every damn time. Every damn time, from ruining fights with drug tests to just saying stupid stuff, and now he looks like he's been arrested for a form of domestic violence and headbutting a police car. So he clearly was extremely intoxicated at 5 a.m. His kid had to beg somebody to call the cops. So I don't know. He just sounds like the piece of garbage that I kind of always thought he was. You know, I pride myself on being able to judge characters, and I'm not always right, but you know, when it comes to these MMA guys, I'm about 95% clip at this point. And I don't know. I don't know what your quick take is on him. I know you said something off the air, but or you had something in mind, but I mean, what's your quick take before I get back to the rest of the fight?
There is no take. I mean, I pretty much had the same reaction Dana White had when he was asked about it after the Hall of Fame thing. He was just, you know, or the weigh-ins. They asked him after weigh-ins on Friday what he thought, and he was just like, it's almost expected at this point. And, you know, like, it's expected, but he sort of made excuses for him still, like, oh, he can't come to Vegas. But it's not just Vegas. I mean, he does stuff in New Mexico, the whole car thing in New Mexico. Yeah. I mean, the guy, as gifted as he is as a martial artist, as a natural martial artist, because it's crazy to think that I've put more years in training than he has, yet he's as good as he is. Mm-hmm. But it's just weird that somebody that gifted and that good in that sport can not be sensible in the other areas of his life.
Yeah, no, I mean, that says it pretty well. The Dana White thing, I don't fall for that. I'm sorry, Dana White's the one inviting him to Vegas. These are UFC events that he's attending.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. He was award, but I don't. I'm just saying, like, the way he said it, like just saying, oh, you know, obviously Vegas is he's making it seem like John Jones coming to Vegas is always going to be a bad idea, but all his mistakes don't happen in Vegas. I mean, the stuff in New Mexico is well documented, and mm-hmm. I don't know where. I mean.
No, I'm blaming Dana White more than John Jones for that. You can't keep, you know, if you're jiu-jitsu instructor and tells you to come in and teach the blue belt class, and every time you show up, you get in a fight with one of the students, and he keeps inviting you, and you keep getting in fights with students. He can't just go, well, Ed can't handle New Brunswick. You know, he's got to go, I'm inviting him into the gym to teach this class. Dana shouldn't be bringing him to Vegas for any of this stuff if it's not a fight scheduled. He shouldn't even be involved with the UFC stuff. He constantly.
Well, I mean, I didn't even know he was getting an award for something in Hall of Fame.
They should have recorded his voice, recorded him,
just like zoomed him. Like, yeah.
Gustafson wasn't there because of COVID restrictions, but, you know, so that's the thing. I don't know. But, anyways, John Jones proves to be what he is. Getting back to the Hall of Fame. So Jones gets his award, gives his speech, talks about how much he loves his family and how supportive they are, and that he beats on him a couple hours later. And then we come around, and that's when it started to get good. Kevin Randleman, I'm not sure if you caught that. His wife, Liz, gave a long speech, but one that was a good speech. It was a good speech about being positive, doing the best you can in life, and just being proud of her husband. And she talked about all her husband's relationships with Boss Rutten was there. He also spoke for a while along with Mark Coleman. So two of the more respected pioneers of the sport. And I mean, it just sounds, I didn't know, I had met Kevin Randleman for 30 seconds in my life. Maybe twice or something at that. But so I didn't know necessarily the personal perspective that they put on it. And he had a big crowd there of people that seemed to have come from Ohio or at least, you know, from around the country who, you know, knew him from the past. And he seemed to have touched a lot of people. So seemed like a really good guy. His kids were there, you know, family was there. Just seemed like the total opposite of the guy who spoke before him. So or not that Randleman spoke, but was spoken about before him. So Randleman, just a legend, you know, fought everybody. I don't know if you caught it, but I think my biggest highlight was hearing Fedor mentioned about 36 times during the UFC Hall of Fame. You know, she said it best. She said that one of Randleman's favorite losses was talking about how one of his favorite fights was a loss. And she goes, honey, if you're going to pick a loss to be your favorite fight, it might as well be Fedor, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things, but for, you know, obviously I was kind of laughing at that. So he, then GSP comes out, Hoist Gracie inducts him, which was awesome for me as a fan and just for the whole sport in general. It's kind of the whole, you know, whole full circle of where it had come to the point where really it reached its peak, in my opinion, as a fan, you know, five, six, almost 7 years ago, probably now. But yeah, St. Pierre gives a speech. Last two guys, highlights of that night. Fun. Friday morning then rolls around. That's where the fan experience was supposed to be. I showed up about an hour before it was supposed to start. Line was already about 5 hours long. Turned around, went and got breakfast, and basically decided that that wasn't going to be the plan any longer, as long as the UFC wants to do what they're trying to do. Basically, they took their 14 fighters signing autographs, put them inside one room, and then had a line outside about five. You know, I know people who got there, or some people got there at 6 a.m. to be first in line, and they were finally able to get in at like 9:30. But the problem is, if you were like, if you got there at 7 a.m. and were 100th in line, I know somebody who sat there till about 10 o'clock. So they were in line for about 3 hours. And once it opened at 9:30, they moved about 15 feet in line. It wasn't looking like they were going to even get in until for another hour and a half after already being there for God knows how long. So just a disgrace. Not a lot of stuff for sale. I don't even know what was going on inside the building. I couldn't get in. It wasn't like it opened up after the autograph sessions. It was just line after line after line. They had their little UFC truck selling the five shirts and, you know, six hats and $500 autograph poster. So yeah, just disappointing on that. That was Saturday too. Didn't even bother getting up early Saturday to go even look at any of that stuff. Wayne's were at the theater, the Park Theater at Park MGM, which was different because there probably was a hockey game or something that Friday night, or something, maybe a concert. Something was taking over the arena, so they had to move it. That led for a big event there being not a big capacity crowd. So I had to get to the weigh-ins kind of earlier than, you know, enjoyable to sit there for a while to watch the weigh-ins. But weigh-ins happened. Everybody made weight. Huge cheers for Diaz. Not huge, you know, some boos for Lawler. And then obviously the main event, Shevchenko, is a huge fan's favorite. And Ortega was more of a fan favorite than Volkanovski. But, you know, more of an even number there. So that was pretty much the fight week. Obviously, then the fights that we're going to talk about rolled around on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, downhill every year that they've done this. I don't know if it's the new owners. I don't know if it's just the disrespect for the fans. I don't know who's running their public relations with the fans these days.
Well, it's funny. I won't say I was chatting with somebody else about it today. Before earlier today, and it's just, you know, I don't know if you saw that. I mean, they bought OpenBet, the betting platform that DraftKings and FanDuel and all these people use to Endeavor, and Ari Emanuel, the owner, he's the big boss of the UFC. He's head of Endeavor, and it's just become this. I mean, it's almost like there's a. I mean, I hate to use the term, but it's turning into like they're trying to target the 1%, you know, like it's not the everyman sport that it always was, that you and I have always seen. They're trying to make it, I mean, it's weird because it's fighting, but it seems like they're trying to make it so highbrow that, I mean, you would think you would not do that. I mean, you want everybody's money, right? Don't you want everybody's money if that wants to pay for it? I just don't see that as I don't know what the cheapest ticket was for UFC 266, but I can tell you right now, the cheapest ticket for Madison Square Garden is $380, and you know.
Yeah, it was more reasonably priced tickets. At least I got mine on pre-sale, so they could have jumped after that. But I know you could have got in for under a couple $100 as opposed to, like you said, the New York prices. Yeah, you make a good point about the 1% thing. It seems like basically now the UFC is advertising if you want to have access to fighters and meet people, you need to do their VIP package.
Yeah.
Which is basically like $1,000 meet and greet.
Yeah, the cheapest one for $268. I mean, obviously that's my focus because, you know, that's always a big deal out here in New York, but the cheapest VIP package per person is $1,150. I tweeted that out when they announced it, along with their COVID protocols, that as someone that just recently went to something in New York City, you know, it's something that's on paper and they're going to say that they do it. So yeah. So that's pretty much how that's going to go.
Yeah. But, that $1,000 is probably a seat up top. In the upper region, mm-hmm. It's like a cocktail meet and greet, and you get to hold the title belt. You might get a picture in the cage.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. That's the other thing too. So it's not just for the fans; it's for the fighters too. Like you said that the fighters were on a storefront. I mean, to me, it's almost like, okay, you're going to like, it's like this is today's cut of meat. You know, put the slabs out there and have the people come check them out. I mean, in a way, it's a little disrespectful to the fighters too. What you and I were just you know, what we got used to at the old Fertitta era expos. You know, you were literally inside like a what's it, the equivalent of a Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way I can think of it. It was like a fighter con, you know what I mean? And I mean, you could, like you said, you just walking around, you could bump into, rub elbows with, not stand in line because they were there too to just look at stuff. There's people competing, they're cornering people in the little grappling tournaments that were going on during the thing. And that just, it's just so like robotic now that I have no interest in. I mean, I want to go to Vegas just because I like the weather. But
you know, I mean, not to dwell on this too much, but when you put all the people and every, sure, it's great when you're front of that line and you walk in there and you get 14 autographs, 14 photos, meet everybody real quick. I mean, I'd much rather have 14 lines that are 20 minutes long each. Give the people the option who they want to meet, stand in line. That way everybody feels like they're a part of it. You know, you can stand in line for 20 minutes, then you go grab a beer. Okay, I'm going to go meet so-and-so. I'll go stand in line another 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, that's just the way that, just the way they did it now, like you said, it's the have and have nots. It's mm-hmm. the people who managed to get up at 5 a.m., get over there and get in line. Those are the people who get to meet. And it's not even like it was back in the day. Like, the not, you know, it's not disrespectful for the other fighters, but it's not. Certain guys aren't the same, you know, it's one thing to stand in line to meet GSP. It's another thing to stand in line to meet, you know, I don't even want to throw a name out there, but some lower card fighter who, you know, you're not even sure what his record is. You know,
but that kind of... it's not even in like they call it the fan experience. And that's not an experience to me to have me stand in line forever, take a 2 second photo and shake hands and then be sent the fuck off. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's not an experience to me. To me, an experience is standing at the finish line when they did the I don't even know if they did it this because it was in September. The track, whatever they call that, the 5K. Yeah. Standing at the finish line in 5K with Aljamain Sterling and Dennis Bermudez and talking shit about how New York and New Jersey are, you know, New Jersey is like a Southern New York or whatever the hell Aljamain Sterling said to me joking around. And, you know what I mean? Like, that's an experience to me. I mean, we took a photo or whatever, but we you know, had that conversation mm-hmm. and you know, just talked about martial arts and fighting and stuff like that. And it's just one of these things that like, that's an experience to me. Not and then following his career and watching him go, you know, climb his way up the ladder. And I know he's got issues with his neck, so he's not going to be able to fight Peter Yan. People are giving him shit about that, but you know what I mean? Just getting to know these guys and understand what they go through a little better rather than having them just be out there and you know, do the photo op and get the fuck out of here. Next, please. I mean, it's a double-sided fuck you to fans and fighters, but I don't know. That's what the success is these days, I guess.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. But hopefully one day they'll maybe try it again, do a big expo. Now people have to pay to go, but you pay, you know what you're getting. You're paying for the experience of a 2 day long thing. We'll talk about that somewhere. We've talked about it a million times, but anyways, getting to the fights. I think that a couple things on the earlier fights that stood out, obviously Jalen Turner looked great in his bout with Medic. Turner's a fighter from the LA area. I actually covered his attended his first fight, covered his second fight in one of my early days of going to some of those events. So,
and the Maximoff versus Brundage was actually a great, it went to decision, but that was a great fight on the prelims. I got a little shit. I want more shit. I want to give to the UFC. This bullshit of ESPN news that they did for the middle prelims, where you know the Vashvili Moraes fight, all those mid card fights that everyone's looking to. I don't fucking have ESPN Plus, and when I downloaded the app to do it, apparently my cable plan doesn't include that, so I had to miss 4 fights.
Well, they put it on. It was on ESPN News.
Is that ESPN what it was? News? Yeah, ESPN Plus or ESPN News. So either way, I had to fucking pay extra for some prelims. Like, get the fuck out of here with that.
That's a shame because Dashvili Marias was.
I know. I heard it was all. I'm
was Dan a Hooker. Fight of the year, like round of the year, like chaos for.
I had to read about it.
Yeah. So well, that's a shame. We'll jump to the main card, it all goes back to
somebody said to me on the MMA news blog. You know, they asked me why don't I play for Fight Pass? And we went over this whole thing when the ESPN Plus thing started. But I'm just going to say it really quick. everything's going to wind up on Fight Pass eventually. So I will see these fights and I'll get to see them the way that I wanted to see them. But I mean, I know it's because of college football, whatever ESPN's ESPN, even though they made a lot of their money during the pandemic off of the UFC, they still pushed back. Once football came back, the UFC now takes a back burner again. It's been like that. It was like that at Fox Sports, but at least they had two other channels that everyone had that they could put the fights on. I don't like the ESPN era. I tweeted it out. Like, I really don't like the ESPN era. And I know their contract is forever, but it's not fun. But yeah, let's go to the main card results.
Jessica Andrade, basically did, I think, what we kind of both agreed was likely to happen, pretty much put it on Cynthia Calvillo, wearing her out, finishing her with punches late in the first round, moves her back up into the top of the rankings in that division, or keeps her up there. You know, she's basically the number one contender in a division where she's already lost the title. So, I mean, Shevchenko, as we'll get to, has cleared out that division, but Andrade looked great. I'm just not sure exactly where this division stands at this point. yeah. I mean, it pretty much sums it up, right? Tough, but just too much strength.
Yeah, I didn't see the TK. I thought she was tough enough to take her to, you know, all three rounds. But I mean, that was a serious power advantage. And that's what she has, like, over the others in that thing. And you know what's going to happen, though, like you just said about Shevchenko. Marina Rodriguez, she was talking about the strawweight division and how, you know, because she's fighting Mackenzie Dern soon. And she told James Lynch, the Canadian god, James Lynch, shout out to James Lynch. He talked to her and she said that the problem with the strawweight division is it's like the same several people fighting for the title over and over again. And we're going to get that with the flyweight division too, the way it's going.
Yeah, I mean, the flyweight, you look at the top 10, I mean, and the top 5-6, Shevchenko's already finished. You know, so yeah, I don't know.
And handily, like not decision, like.
No, there's no rematches in there.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly. So I don't know how this division goes. I think Shevchenko's only real move is probably hope Nunes wins her next fight and then be willing to go up again, but. You know,
we're on the same page with that.
It didn't
like even do a catchweight, do like, and I said on this on the MMA news vlog, do a bad bitch belt or, you know, like the BMF for Jorge Masvidal.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like
that might
do it at catchweight, make it that weird, you know, make up a fucking title like you did or you've already done it. I mean, that would sell out. People would be all on board for that because James Lynch actually just published his interview with Shevchenko. So I'm looking forward to watching that over at the MMAnews.com YouTube channel. But man, whoo. Yeah. I'm just like, that woman is, I mean, she's like you know, like they compare her to Black Widow and, you know, John Wick and all these people. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well talking about it. We'll just jump to that fight. But yeah, she finished Lauren Murphy. Went a while, went to the fourth round. But not It was more Murphy kind of standing in front of Shevchenko and Valentina just playing it safe until the point where she just turned it on. And it was like she probably could have done that at any point, but she waited to a point where there was really no risk to her at all, barring something absolutely crazy happening. It's weird where the sport is right now because, you know, she's badass. I mean, she might be the pound for pound best fighter in the world, you know, at least in the argument for it, for sure.
Oh, hell
and,
yeah.
You know, and you're kind of at a point now where you got a lot of guys, you know, you got us talking about it, Axios, he does his thing and she's clearly his number one fighter. So you're starting to see it kind of be more recognized. You know, you don't have so much of the, you know, sexist kind of talk now. When it was Rousey, it was submission. So maybe it was a little, wasn't as, when you got somebody who's beating the living hell out of people over and over and over again. It's wild. So, I mean, she's crazy. I don't even know. I don't know how she loses. I don't see her losing to anybody except Nunes.
She's going to lose to, you know, time. And that's going to take some time because right now, like you said, looking at the division. And the only reason we jumped to that was because, I mean, the Andrade Calvillo, that was that they had two of those two flyweights on the main card. And it's just something that that they're going to see each other again. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's not going to, none of it's going to work out for it. It's going to be her for a while, just like it's been Nunes for a while. So yeah, I think they need to do a super fight. Nunes Shevchenko 3.
Yeah. And in the meantime, set up like a Grand Prix. They got to figure out some way to get through all these other contenders who she's beat, and they need to rise to the top. Now it's probably Andrade. I mean, she's done her part. But yeah, just crazy. Anyway, so after that opening bout, the Andrade win, Curtis Blaydes, Rozenstrike. Again, I mean, I hit this one.
Yeah, you closed. Did. Yeah, no, you're right with this one. The takedowns. Yeah.
Once he got the takedowns, it was clear.
I was mad as soon as it happened because I picked Rozenstrike.
Yeah, no, I mean, as soon as it happened, you realized that was the key to victory.
Yeah.
You also realized that Rozenstrike was going to get passive. Much like he has in some of his other, at least his fight with Overeem, where he ended up winning late. But for most of the fight, he was passive. Blaydes can be passive too, and Blaydes just did what he needed to do. He did get hit with that flying knee, which jacked his eye up. But I mean, he did. He fought smart. He picked up the win. I mean, it's not pretty, but when you're kind of fighting a one-dimensional striker, it's the smart way to fight. So I can't really blame him. Again, wasn't the best fight, but you know, big win for Blaydes, and he moves on. That brought us then to the people's main event, as some were calling it, a rematch, 17 years in the making. Robbie Lawler, Nick Diaz. On the podcast, I picked Nick Diaz to win a decision. Shortly after arriving in Vegas and seeing some of those videos I saw. Now, while it was only shadow boxing videos of Nick Diaz, when I saw him look to be about 30 pounds heavier than his prime fighting weight, I quickly went to the Vegas window. My group hit a quick little parlay by putting Lawler in Diaz's place. So ended up making a little cash on the Robbie Lawler TKO win. I mean, I think that's just what it comes down to. It seems like you had one fighter who really wanted to be there in Lawler, and you had another guy who wasn't sure where he wanted to be in a sense in Diaz. And even his post-fight interview was really weird, assuming you caught that, where he was talking about how the fight was set up. And God only knows what that means, but it certainly didn't sound like he was really stoked about being signed to fight Robbie Lawler.
No. And there was also more like I got a sense of – he wanted to see what's left in me if I want to fight again, if they're going to let me fight again, and what's left in me. I mean, there was almost a weird, like, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. I don't want to say humbleness, because we've seen Nick Diaz fight enough. Uh-huh. I mean, it's like look at Nate, that aggression and that, like, you know, I'm ready to go. None of that was there. And then, like you said, that Brett Okamoto interview, I think that was recorded or aired, like you said, the day before you got, like, the day when you were making your way over there. And I think, I watched it that afternoon, and it definitely made me, wonder about it. And not for nothing, to his credit, I mean, the guy's been fighting since he was 18 years old. To his credit, he outstruck Robbie Lawler. It's just Robbie Lawler got the finish, and the what he was doing seemed to be working. And I think the difference between the two of them now versus the first fight was just that Robbie Lawler's continuous, like, you know, staying active just had him not only A, he wanted to avenge a loss, and B, he was ready for whatever, he was ready for all of that, which is why he kept coming at him. I was actually afraid that if it went to decision, you know, usually fighters walking backwards get scored against. And, the counter striking was what was winning for him. And no, I don't think anybody does that as good as Nick Diaz. I mean, just to his credit, the dude was, the numbers, if it went to the numbers and stats, he probably could have, you know, picked up a win. But I mean, that right straight to the Daniel Cormier called it the check right hook. He was in love with check right hooks that night. I know you couldn't hear him in the arena, but I mean, he was called the check right hook for everybody that landed that combo where they got the hand and get delivered that punch right to the nose. I mean, you get punched in the nose like that, that's going to end any fight. I don't care who you are. So,
But yeah. But again, like you mentioned them throwing punches, it was a fun fight. Yeah. I don't. I mean, for a round and a half, a round and 30 seconds, it was a fun fight. Actually, went to the third round, so it was two rounds and then 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. But it was nonstop action. So it wasn't like Diaz didn't come to fight. He came to fight. It's just the thing is you're fighting Lawler who's hitting you with hammers. So he only really has to hit you one every 10 times you land on him. He's got to land one, and he's doing the same amount of damage. Diaz historically take away the knockout of Lawler has always been like a win by 1,000 cuts. But to get the 1,000 cuts in, a lot of times he has to get to the fourth, fifth round of fights.
Yeah.
And if you're only able to have enough energy, your gas tank, to get through two rounds, then you only get 250 cuts in. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where it was a matter of time, and you kept going, man. You know, it was hard to believe when I saw Diaz out there that he was going to go five rounds, especially at the rate that he was throwing.
Yeah,
you're going, dude, there's like no way. Like, unless this dude's superhuman.
There's things that Robbie Lawler did too to kind of bring on the end. There was a liver kick that he landed that Diaz kind of showed his cards that hurt him in the round two, and then he shook it off, but. If you've ever taken a strike to the liver, it's not something that you shake off that quick. I don't care who you are, though, that pain sticks with you for a while. And I'm wondering if that had something to do with it too. But and it was weird because the way he landed the kick, it was almost like he dug in his toes right into his liver. I don't know if you saw it from the arena, but at home, you know, with the replay, you could see the mark that it left on his side. And that's definitely like, that's not a pain that fades, you know, it's not like a Charlie horse where you can shake it off like that. It's internal. So it hurts a lot and hangs out for a bit.
Yeah. You're probably bleeding inside. You know? Yeah, no, there's no doubt. So, he hit him with a couple body shots early. You could tell like he came out kind of targeting a little bit of the body when he saw probably the same thing that most of us saw, that Diaz was softer than normal. You know, good respect out of both guys.
Yeah. Great. Right. Yeah.
You know, Diaz is as popular as ever. I mean, he got a huge pop. Mm-hmm. The crowd loves him. You know, I mean, I was pulling for Robbie when it was all said and done, but I wasn't rooting again. I mean, I cheered for Diaz when he came out. I clapped for him just like I did for Lawler. You know, they're two all-time greats. And
well, it's just like their first fight. I mean, they were both like these finishers and you know, balls to the wall guys when they first fought. And it was just one of those fights. Like, it's a fight you want. You like Chandler Gaethje coming up in November. I just want to see it. I mean,
But I don't think we need to see Diaz again. I like if had he in the interview himself.
Yeah,
I'm
cool if he retires. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a terrible performance to go out on. I mean, I'm sure, but I don't know who. I mean, he was fighting a guy in a 4-fight losing streak, and I know it's Robbie Lawler. But like, who is Diaz going to fight that's going to make an easier fight for him, or one that's going to end better for him? And now, at least this one, he ended up conscious. You know, I mean, I don't know. But now if he loses, gets down to 170, gets back in shape, then yeah, there's plenty of guys. I don't know why. To me, it all makes the perfect sense. Why don't you do Lawler and Nate Diaz now?
Yeah,
to me, that fight makes
I saw that pop up a lot. Yeah, yeah.
You build off the story. We know the excitement that Nick and Robbie bring. Maybe Nate's just a third fight of that kind of trilogy of the Diaz versus the Lawler. So I don't know. As soon as it ended, it's like that's the fight to make right there. Diaz Nate doesn't have a lot going. He's coming off a loss, and now he can try to avenge his brother and. You know, set up a little two fight thing with Robbie Lawler out the door. I mean, I don't know. To me, that's the fights that I want to see these guys in. But it was a fun fight. Good to see Lawler pick up a win. Nice to see Diaz back in the cage and doing what he does, even in a little bit of a shadow of what he used to be. But big win for Lawler. Hopefully he doesn't. You know, they give him just a reasonable fight. He doesn't get another wrestler or some crazy matchup in his next bout. We talked about Shevchenko. Main event, Ortega, Volkanovski. Volkanovski retains his title, 5-round decision. And, in 4 rounds and 4 minutes of domination, but there was 1 minute of interesting fun. You know, the excitement of that 1 minute where third round, Ortega, well, he dropped him and then jumped right into a guillotine choke. Man, when I saw Volkanovski like kind of
flailing his feet to try to get out of it,
flailing, yeah. You know, kind of hot, you know, bouncing his back up and stuff. But my thought was like, oh my God, he's in trouble. Like that's a reaction you usually don't see guys get out. Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you know he did a post fight like after not in the cage. It was I think it was with Megan O'Leary. Or no, the guy, one of the ESPN guys that they got there now, one of the newer guys, or the less known guys, asked him like, "How did you feel when that was happening?" And his reply was, "It felt like I was about to lose the fucking title." And I was just like, "Yeah, man, it looked like it was about to happen." You know, it's funny. He talked about how he shaved his head because of the barbers and stuff out, you know, the whole everything going on out there in Auckland, and he was like, you know, that was the reason why he shaved his head, but you know, they were pretty sweaty by then. And that might've made it easier to slip out of. The other thing too, is, you know, when you get into grappling and stuff, you kind of learn, especially if you know, you're going to be doing it, like say it's a long, like if it's a 10 minute grappling match and you go for a sub and you don't get it, you kind of give yourself every grappler has their own like clock of when they should let go or, you know, so they don't burn out their arms so they can try something else. And that was Ortega's grappling intelligence, because he transitioned from that. Then he went into the triangle when Volkanovski was on top of him. I forgot what else did he – what did he had a well, darce he, that was really nice.
Yeah,
was,
he went from, like, the guillotine to, like, a darce, and then he ended up on the bottom, and yeah. Then that's when he threw up the triangle. Once the triangle hit, I thought the triangle was the last.
And I didn't even mention the damage he took before he tried those submissions. So that's also taxing too. Like, you know, how distracting is the pain from you knowing whether or not the sub in as is sunk in as good as you would hope it's sunk in. So it was just it was actually a really great. It was better than I was expecting that fight. I was super impressed with it, and I think. Listen, I think Volkanovski gets a lot of shit for being a decision guy and not finishing guys, you know, because of the amount of decisions or whatever. Because, you know, they were talking about how he hasn't proved himself as a champion because he's not finishing guys. But that fight, right? I mean, that's championship shit right there. You know, like just,
no, muscle, he survived. Just
muscle out of three really deep subs from a guy that's really good at subs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's what he came out of deep water and survived. A mistake and his opponent's strength, and that's what, you know, and we can talk about him not being a finisher, but he beat up Ortega probably worse than anybody on that whole fight card got beat up. You know, he that fight easily could have been stopped. I'm not one to watch doctors stop fights, but you know, when they show, I don't, and maybe it's different on TV, but the flashes of Ortega's face, like I'm thinking, like
you're,
I just
you're, you'd have your criticisms of her deem if you watched the.
Watch yeah, that's what I mean. Can, we're sitting there in the crowd, and I'm like, "Oh, Herb's gonna stop it." No, this is one where Herb's gonna let the guy pass away. You know,
but you're gonna have a criticism still because I mean, so I guess you haven't watched it or seen the clips yet because Herb Dean's, you know, the doctor's there, and Herb Dean's asking him questions, and Ortega's not really. Even Volkanovski was like, "How are they letting this fight go?" And he's not answering the questions. He's not answering Herb Dean's questions. But listen, either way. I mean, yeah, Brian Ortega definitely still like that dude's definitely a badass too. I mean, I don't know who got what because again, this event was a little bit aggravating for me, but those fights were good and they definitely deserve credit.
Yeah, no, big win. Volkanovski's an animal. Ortega is can take a beating, man. I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing to say, but you know, when you're a fighter, I guess it is. If you can take a beating and keep coming, that's in the long run, that's good. It's just you just hope you're not fighting Volkanovski every time that comes around. But fun fights, good fights, top to bottom. Definitely a good event. A really good event.
The card was like a hard, more for the hardcore fight fan. When you look at the names that were on it, like Devashvili Moraes, you know, Roxanne Modafferi, you know, all from top to bottom, you know, this was a really fun card to watch. That's why I was pissed about the ESPN news thing. So fuck ESPN and their news.
But from one paywall, we go to this week's paywall that we got Bellator. Bellator 267.
Showtime.
Early start on Showtime. Main card starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. So this will be one that I will have to figure out a game plan to catch that as I'm scheduled currently to work. Basically, is a showcase the European fighters that they have. Some of the guys who have come through the Euro Series, throw them through previous Bellator London events. But that's basically what it is. Very few other than, Borga and McCourt and obviously Lima and Page. I think they might be the only ones on the card that actually have, Bellator events in the United States. Co-main event, Liam McCourt, four-fight win streak, fights Borga coming off of a loss in her last fight on the main card of Bellator 256 to Nogueira. But, I think this is a showcase for McCourt. Obviously, she has some things going for her outside the cage, and that makes it obviously intriguing for her to be a good, notable, recognizable fighter for Bellator. So
Yeah. She's
co-maining. I think she picks up a win. Borga's tough, but that's basically this is kind of like a fight night, challenger series with a mega main event of a rematch of Douglas Lima and MVP Michael Venom Page. I don't know if you have much to say about the co-main event, but I would like
to take I like Liam McCourt. I can tell you that. Like her a lot. I agree with you. It's definitely one that I feel like, Jessica Borger's 3-3, and so there's obviously a skill disparity between the two. So I don't know where this is going to put her. I have to check the rankings. They'll update the following. This is on Friday, so the following Tuesday we'll see where the rankings are. I don't know if Leah McCourt's ranked yet. I have to look, but she's definitely one of their showcase fighters. They like doing stuff in Dublin. She's from Northern Ireland, so like you said, it's definitely setting it up. But it's combat sports, so you never know, anything could happen. Many times, as we know, look at the plan for Yoel Romero kind of went kaput with his 266 fight, so against Phil Davis, and if anything, it made Phil Davis look better. So you never know. They have plans, but this is not pro wrestling. This is real fighting. As much joking around when I say AEW is real fighting, I just say that to be the dickhead. So
yeah, and Borga's beat, she has a win over Amber LeBrock for Bellator 226. So she has beat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A decent competitor, who
you really don't know. You really don't know what's going to happen when it comes to fight night, especially with the during the time of COVID and all the distractions going on. So we'll see. Especially it's their first time over there too in the UK. So
yeah, the fact that they were able to actually put together a card in the UK is pretty impressive, considering the UFC hasn't been able to. To do that, but not that this is this can be a UFC level card depending on what the how the weather I guess is for the UFC on what they want to do for their fight card. But anyways, back to Bellator. The main events we're talking about, certainly Douglas Lima, Michael Venom Page. Page 19-1, only lost to Douglas Lima. Lima, the former champion, is on a 2-fight losing streak with losses to Musasi and Amosov. When in doubt, I always go with who I believe is the more complete mixed martial artist. And although Lima's got 9 career losses, I think his resume speaks for itself. And I think the eye test with him is that he is the complete mixed martial artist.
Yeah.
And I think that he should win the fight. Now, with that said, it is MMA, and Michael Venom Page MMA is a weird roller coaster ride of of craziness, mm-hmm. you know? So while Lima won the first fight by, you know, highlight reel knockout, Page was doing well in the fight, was landing yeah. and stuff. And
he does hit hard. Like, he's definitely someone that hits to do damage. So, I mean, he's also somebody, he's another one that'll come in. I think he's going to come in prepared to do things different than, he's different to everybody, but you know, I now that they've crossed hands before. So both men are good. I already have an idea of what to expect and what to prepare for, being that he was the loser and he know maybe he won't be so flashy. Maybe we'll see him fight a little more and less, you know, less of the shenanigans that he does. But I mean, it's definitely, I think he still has an MMA, I guess we shouldn't say puncher's chance, we'll say a striker's chance. But I feel like he's got a strong striker's chance to still upset. But I'm definitely like Douglas Lima. I think Douglas Lima is just, and this is a fight that Michael Venom Page has been kind of, you know, stomping his feet, getting on his soapbox, stomping his feet and saying, I want this rematch. And Bellator definitely made him fight a few guys before it happened, so I don't mind it. So
no, I don't mind the rematch. I mean, it makes sense right now. Lima, like yeah. I said, it's on 2-fight lose streak. Page hasn't lost since that fight, so makes sense. I mean, I'm gonna go with Lima officially, but Page, the thing about Page that scares me is the shot that you don't see coming. What part, you know, the elbow, the knee, the just the angle. So it opens it up, and it. It wouldn't be bad for Bellator if Michael Page won this fight.
No, it'd be very good for them because they're, I mean, you know, they have so much highlight reel footage with him and the Pokemon shit and, you know, the Thanos glove and the Naruto stuff that he, mm-hmm. so he's definitely good for TV. So yeah, it would be really good for Bellator if he wins.
You know, Andy's 34 years old. So this is kind of like, you know, a win here and he has a chance at mega stardom. Big money, whether it's in Bellator or UFC, a loss here, and you kind of are always probably going to be a little bit of a gatekeeper, despite maybe having a tremendous record. So I don't know. Interesting. That's, like I said, main card 4 p.m. Eastern this Friday on Showtime. Prelims prior to that, I imagine running also through the Bellator app as well as YouTube. So
yeah,
that'll be the Friday action. Saturday UFC. Santos and Johnny Walker and Game Bread FC Bare Knuckle MMA on the BKFC app is also on Saturday night. So
yeah, early Saturday afternoon, I'm actually going to be doing the live results for CFFC 101, which is I was going to try to get to it, but my I don't trust my car right now. I got to get some work done on the car. It's in Pennsylvania, in early afternoon, like 1:30 in the afternoon. So I'll be able to get to training, thank God. So when I'm done with training, I'll be doing a live result on MyMMAnews.com. So make sure you keep it dialed in there. That's on Fight Pass at 1:30 PM my time. So if you're not able to watch it, the results will be, I'll be doing live results for that on MyMMAnews.com.
Yeah. And for those that watch on YouTube, if you didn't catch last week, Ed's interview with Eric McGracken. Check that out. I got a chance to listen to that, and he did a great job interviewing. Tried to bust my balls a little bit, kept it cool though. So anybody that hasn't listened to that, I highly recommend that for some.
And just FYI, I mean, I know we do this when we do this, our numbers have been a little low of viewership, but when we do a streaming live on Tuesday nights because of Dana White, everybody's watching Dana White Contender Series. I uploaded my two interviews for Aaron Jeffrey, who's fighting tonight. Hopefully he's winning right now while we're recording. Those are on the YouTube channel too, if you want to check those out. It was before his CFFC 93 title fight and after when he won, and his story and everything he went through to get to get to where he is tonight. It's worth listening to. And after you hear his story, you're probably going to be rooting for him too, because the guy literally, you know, a lot of people don't know what these guys go through just to try to, just to get to, you know, the big show. I mean, if that's, I know we spent the first 20 to 30 minutes, 30 minutes, half hour talking about how bad the UFC has evolved into a giant monster, but it's still the dream of a lot of fighters. And in that sense, that's why, I mean, I keep doing this and writing about it and stuff like that, because at least their side needs to be told. And hopefully he wins tonight when I start editing this.
Best of luck to Aaron Jeffrey as he steps to the Contender Series tonight. Check out the show on Twitter at Combat Hour, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMA Hawk 21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbizol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Oldhead Carb on Twitch. Ed, still recovering from Vegas, but look forward to more action, including maybe jumping on Contender Series here in a few minutes. So have a good rest of the week, and talk to you again soon.
Keep it moist, Matthew.
Have a good night.
Hey guys, Ed here, east coast side of the Coast to Coast Combat Hour podcast. If you like what we're doing, make sure you subscribe on YouTube and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like to help us out and donate, the support links are in any of the podcast descriptions, and some of the links are also provided on our YouTube channel, The Blog Board Jungle. Thanks again for listening, and if you give us some support, we'll give you a shout on the podcast, maybe bring you on for a UFC pay-per-view breakdown or two. Thanks again.